as simple, though, as what our caller said, which is they lost 18-2 to the team they lost to in the World Series and it killed their confidence? Is it as simple as that?
No, because I don't think this is a team that lacks confidence. Mm. I think they're lacking in fundamentals sometimes defensively, but that's not why they're losing a lot of these games. It's frustrating to us to watch Jazz not a routine grounder to second, not be able to get the ball out of his glove and flip it over to Goldie. It's the Volpe errors. It's the bad angles to balls in the outfield that we saw Belly make, or even Jason Dominguez. Like it's all of those things. And so I can't help to go back to what I said earlier in the week, that this feels like a lack of accountability. And it's okay when you make this mistake because your manager's not going to scream at you.
Right.
So it's just like, all right, whatever. I'll be better tomorrow. You know what I mean?
No, I get you.
And sometimes you need to be yelled at.
Right.
Sometimes you need to be told about yourself. And I don't know if that happens enough.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Let's go to Mike in New Jersey. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Evan. I just wanted to talk about Volpe, too. Everybody's made good points, too, but... And I've been hearing it for weeks now. Send him down to the minors with where he is mentally, from a mental aspect. Wouldn't sending him down to the minors just break him even more?
Maybe.
And even the last caller said it. His swing, he tries to hit a home run every time. If he just hits one into the gap, he's got enough speed to lead the league in doubles and triples. And
if to your point, sending him down, which I would not do. Just for the record. But if they sent him down and it broke his confidence, I mean...
Then who is he actually?
Then who is he?
I agree.
Like, I think Francisco Alvarez's response to being sent down to the minors is why he's got a chance to be a real good player in this league.
Yeah, because Francisco Alvarez is that dude. Take a couple days. No, I'm going today.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm going to work on it and get right. He's that dude. He wants to be great. I mean, that's part of it. I talk about it all the time in sports and particularly football players because it's so easy to just cruise once you've... quote unquote made it. That's either as a rookie or a guy who signs a big contract after 4 or 5 years. But if you want to be great, you got to grind.
Yeah, damn right.
All the damn time. And I think Francisco Alvarez is a grinder. He cares about it.
I'm playing a game with you. All right. I want to play for you a question that was asked of Anthony Volpe last night. So we're going to play the question. Don't play the answer. I cut it up for you, Thomas. It's just the question and then the answer. We're going to hear the question from Volpe. I want you to tell me how he should answer it.
Okay.
And then we'll listen to his actual
answer. Let's hear it.
You like that game?
I do.
We call it Tiki Knows How to Answer Questions from the Media. That's not really that catchy of a name. We may have to work on it.
Yeah, that one didn't work.
I tried. Here is the question that was asked to Anthony Volpe.
After a night like this, where there's a couple of errors, but you contribute offensively, you win the game, you go home, are you thinking about the errors and mad about that? Are you saying, hey, we won the game. I helped the team win the game by, you know, with a bat. What's the mindset when we leave here?
So that's the question.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you are Anthony Volpe. How would you answer that?
I'm cutting them off right away. Ooh. I'm saying, yeah, I was good, but I also sucked. I made a mistake, multiple, and I got to be better with that. Consistency is what wins, and I need my guys to count on me consistently in order for us all to win. That's what I would say.
Do you think Volpe said that?
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, here is the response from Anthony Volpe.
I mean, tonight I'm just going to go home, watch my videos, prepare for tomorrow. And once I go to bed, it's over. And once we'll get to work tomorrow once we get to the ballpark.
You like that answer or not really?
It just sounds like he doesn't care.
Hmm. And you know he does care.
That bothers me a little bit.
Oh, you really?
Yeah, because it sounds like he doesn't care.
Huh.
I think here's the issue. A lot of athletes, especially in this town, because of how much media there is, they tend to not be real, right? They tend not to tell you what they're actually feeling. They want it to be over with. But the problem with doing that is that when you kind of dismiss a question, you leave it unanswered.
Right.
And so it's going to get asked again. And it's going to get asked again and again and again and again. And eventually, you're going to get so annoyed with being asked the same question because you didn't answer it the first time that you're going to start getting pissed off. And so your answers are not going to be like benign and not caring. They're going to be adversarial. And what you're actually doing is talking to the fan.
Right.
You're talking specifically to a media member, but you're also talking to the fan. And so... like, apathy is not okay in sport, especially not in New York. You have to. It's an emotional sport. The fans are emotional about it. We know that you're emotional about it. You can see his emotion on his face. Hits a 450-foot home run. It was awesome. He was at the highest he could possibly be at. Helped the Yankees win the game last night. You see him double clutch and short hop it to Goldie. You could also see it. But then he tells us, yeah, I'm just going to go home and chill. Yeah. We know that's not true.
Mm.
So, like, just speak it, man. Speak it. It's all good. It doesn't matter. They're not going to cut you for saying, I sucked or right. We sucked or whatever. Just be real.
I didn't realize when I pulled the clip that he was going to be pulled to the principal's office. Tiki did not like that. I didn't know. I listened to it, and I was like, I'm not sure how you're supposed to answer it sometimes, but I'm very intrigued by what you had to say.
But that's the 162. That's 162 mentality.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be out there tomorrow.
You know, I try, and I think we all should enjoy wins. The Yankees won last night.
Right.
The Mets lost last night. You don't want to get too down on losses, too excited about wins. The one thing that sticks in my brain, and it's the Yankees' fault. The Yankees did this to me last year. Remember how it ended with the bad defense?
Unfortunately.
Even if that's not the reason the Yankees lost the World Series, it's a huge contributing factor. And we sat there in the days and the weeks after the Yankees lost the World Series saying we should have known. This was an issue all year. Mm-hmm. Why are we surprised? And so now, I'll use a Met and Yankee example. When the Mets win, but they go 2-for-11 with runners in scoring position, I say to myself, dude, I'm so glad they won, but doesn't it feel like this is going to be their death sentence?
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing with Volpe and the Yankee defense. Yeah. Like, even when they win, there's a part of you in the back of your mind that says, I love the win, it's great, but you just kind of feel like it's going to end badly, and when it does, it's going to be this, and we should have known. Like, the Met hitting with runners in scoring position has been a problem all year.
Right.
And there are games in which they win despite it. I mean, it happens a lot. And I don't want to take the joy away from winning because you won, just like the Yankees last night. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, I know that when it ends, however it ends, wherever it ends, we're going to think back to the issue that plagued the team all year long that sometimes you got away with, but ultimately you couldn't get
right,
away
with. You want to be wrong about it. The last thing you want is to be right about it.
Welcome to the dark side, Evan.
But can I give you the team that makes me fight this?
Okay.
It's football, the Indianapolis Colts. And I want to walk you through the 2006 Indianapolis Colts. I know. How did I get there? You'll hear. Oh, you love the football analogy. The Indianapolis Colts, and you can fact check me on the numbers here, Sean, couldn't stop the run. Couldn't stop it all year. Couldn't do it. And then come playoff time, they stopped the run.
Right.
So the bugaboo that killed them all year that we thought, oh, they can't get through the post, they can't stop the run, eventually turned into their strength. And so is it possible that the Yankees get to the playoffs and play clean defense? Is it possible that the Mets get to the playoffs and hit 552 with runners in scoring position? I guess it's possible. At least you hope that. But in the back of your mind, you're like, yeah, the bugaboos from the 162 will eventually kill you. Even over the best of five or the best of seven.
Right.
Matt is calling from Northport. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Matt.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Last time I spoke to you, you might remember I was talking about how it kind of stinks that the trading deadline wasn't moved back to accommodate more teams in the postseason, and that makes a seller's market for a handful of teams. So I thought of a way the Mets could usurp that, because I'm hearing, you know, if I see them trade Vientos for Luis Robert, I'll throw up. So what you could do, why don't they could approach one of these, like, bubble teams or even a team that's in it like Detroit and say, look at what we have excess, look at what they have excess, maybe we can find a partner where nobody's like out of it selling off, but we can take one of our excess, take someone else's excess and kind of don't let those seller teams rip you off, but instead find another team that's in the chase and kind of find a partner.
It's something I brought up a lot last year as like an idea. Because you do have a lot of teams that are not giving in.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's too many or not enough sellers and too many buyers, how does that work? So can you find another buyer where your strength meets their weakness and their weakness meets your strength, or vice versa, where a deal matches up? So like the Astros want one of the Mets infielders. They're also talking about Carlos Correa, which we'll get into in a little bit. Is it possible that the Mets could get one of their better relievers for one of their bats? In theory, it makes a lot of sense. I brought this up with the Mets and the Yankees, and I know that they don't necessarily make trades together, but the Mets had a surplus of infielders. The Yankees didn't until they obviously made the trades they made, and they had outfielders. So I think in theory it makes a lot of sense, but are we going to see it? Like, are we going to see those kinds of competitive trades?
Like the win-win trade.
Yeah, they're rare. I remember one years ago when the A's got Yoenis Cespedes, not the Met version, where it was John Lester for Yoenis Cespedes. You guys remember that one? That was weird.
Yeah.
So it kind of happens.
And it's win-win in real time, not win-win one guy is winning now because it's helping him pursue and get to the postseason. The other is winning 3 years from now.
Yes.
The prospect comes up and, I don't know, does whatever he does. When it's hard. Because if that guy's going to help someone else win, why isn't he helping you win?
Right, right. Well, it would be like in the Mets case, Mark Vientos for a reliever. But you got to match up. Like, how many competitive teams are willing to trade a reliever? I brought one up to you guys recently with the Yankees. We talked about how I don't think the Yankees should sell. I think that's crazy. Mm-hmm. But they could do that. Like, they could call up the Padres, who are currently playing Luis Arraez at first base, and say, you know what, Padres could use a first baseman, or at least they could have more flexibility. Arraez could play second. They could use Goldie. Would a Goldschmidt for one of the many good Padre reliever deals work? And I mentioned Wandy Peralta as an option, maybe Adrian Marjone, whoever you want to go with. Like, could that kind of deal work? I just don't know if it's going to happen. By the way, my Colts analogy, just to give you some more football on this. They not only were dead last in rushing yards allowed that year, they allowed 100 yards on the ground in every single regular season game. In fact, the lowest total was 111. They allowed over 200 yards on the ground three times, and then one time they allowed 375 yards on the ground. During the postseason. You ready for this?
375 yards on the ground?
Yeah, to the Jaguars, huh? Isn't that crazy?
Who was that?
Fred Taylor back then?
Yeah. It had to be.
Had to be. 2006.
Yeah.
So that's how bad they were. Dead last in the league. Postseason time. They played the Kansas City Chiefs. They allowed a combined total of rushing yards in their first game, 44. Second game against Baltimore, 83.
Oh,
nice. Third game against New England, 93. Under 100 in every game. And then finally in the Super Bowl, they allowed 111. So they allowed fewer yards in postseason games than they did in any regular season game. And that's why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because maybe, despite the Met issues with runners in scoring position and the Yankees issues with overall defense, maybe magically in October it becomes a strength.
Maybe. Maybe.
Or not.
Or unlikely.
But that's why, like, the 2006 Colts have, like, this weird place in my heart.
Yeah.
Where
just the one example that you can find where just because you suck at one thing in the regular season, you can be good when it matters.
You don't think I can find another one?
I'm sure you can, but.
In fact, I could find one. In fact, what if I told you it's the New York Giants?
2011.
2011, running the football.
Only team in NFL history to win a Super Bowl and be the worst rushing team all season.
Thank you, Sean. See? Mm. You were speaking my language. Mm. How about that? I gave you a giant example now. Sean and I both did, like, as a team.
Yes.
They were dead last and running the football.
Who did they play in that postseason?
Atlanta, Green Bay, San Francisco, and the Patriots. First game against Atlanta, they went for 172 yards. There was not a game that season in which they ran for nearly as many yards. What up?